Thank you for your generous and regular support of Issues Etc. Your gifts and your prayers are vital to our Christ-centered, cross-focused radio outreach. A good summary of my hopes for Issues Etc. for 2009 are St. Paul's words to the Colossians. Pray for us, too, that God may open a door for our message so that we may proclaim the mystery of Christ, for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly, as I should. Be wise in the way that you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Thank you again for your support of Issues Etc. We'll continue defending the faith, teaching the truth, and making the most of every opportunity to proclaim Christ and Him crucified.
Fellow citizens, for 8 years it has been my honor to serve as your president. For 8 years we've also strived to expand opportunity and hope here at home. The addicted and suffering are finding new hope through faith-based programs. Vulnerable human life is better protected. And the federal bench includes wise new members like Justice Sam Alito and Chief Justice John Roberts. And so, my fellow Americans, for the final time, good night. May God bless this House and our next president. And may God bless you and our wonderful country. Thank you.
It's an excerpt from President Bush's farewell address last night. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Well, in the first half hour of this hour of Issues Etc., your chance to talk live to a U.S. congressman or call-in number. It'll be John Chimkus in with us from the 19th Congressional District in Illinois for a Washington update. Our call-in number live this Friday afternoon, the 16th of January, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. What's on your mind when it comes to Washington? Of course, next week is going to be the big week in Washington. They're talking about an expectation of perhaps 2 million people there to witness the inauguration. I don't know how you're going to witness an inauguration through a crowd of 2 million people. Most will stay home and simply watch it on television. An historic moment, no doubt about it. It always is when we inaugurate a new president. But there's also a lot of work to be done on the economy, the war. This president has promised in the past that one of the first things he will do is sign the Freedom of Choice Act. Is that a real possibility? Will this Congress make it possible for then-President Obama to sign the Freedom of Choice Act and undo so much legislation that regulates and curbs abortion on demand? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. A little bit later, Wesley Smith is going to join us. He's written recently about what he calls biological colonialism. This is a sad tale to tell, but it has to do with the organs of people outside the United States finding their way into the United States, into the hands and the bodies of rich Americans. He calls it biological colonialism. We'll see what he thinks about it coming up here in about 25 minutes on Issues Etc. We got some great shows next week. Monday, Dr. Larry Rast will be on to talk about pietism. Pietism is one of these old movements in the church that is still with us today. They don't call it pietism anymore, but you'll recognize it when we talk about it with Dr. Larry Rast Monday on the program. Congressman John Chimkus joins us for a Washington update. As usual, he is punctual to the point of surprise. He joins us to talk about what's going on in Washington, what's going to happen next week in Washington, and you can join us as well, 1-877-623-6943, or talkback@issuesetc.org. John, welcome back.
Great. You did a good job. Lengthening it out this time.
Yeah, they call that vamping, but we didn't have to vamp too long for you.
Not too bad.
And it's a good thing you're in shape. You just kind of jumped right in here, quietly slipped into your chair. It's amazing. Next week is the big inauguration. They're talking about maybe 2 million people crowding into this area to watch the new president be sworn in. Are you going to have a good seat?
Yeah, well, I'll be up on the podium.
Will you?
All the members of the House and, of course, the Senate. We are the seats there. So, and then other people. But yeah, that's where I've sat the last couple times.
So you're going to have the bird's eye view of the inauguration.
Well, pretty much. I'm not sure. We line up in the chamber and then march, and then wherever they sit us down, they sit us down. And that's so I'm not sure if I'll be on the far left or kind of in the center. It's just the luck of the draw. When we'll gather in the chamber at 10 and then be ushered out on the podium about 10:30, and then things start.
Which how many inaugurations will this be for you serving in the U.S. Congress?
This will be my fourth.
Okay. Yeah,
the last Clinton, the two Bushes, and now Obama's.
What are you thinking about this new president coming in? What are your hopes for him?
Well, with the war on terror and the economy, you hope that he's successful. You know, we want success for him because that means success for the country. He has reached out to Republicans, at least in his public comments and even in some private meetings with John Boehner, the minority leader. We don't see that being followed up by the Democrat leadership in the House. When we move in this stimulus bill, there's no input by us. And so we expect that he's going to talk a good game, but his party folks in the legislative chambers will not move in a bipartisan manner. We have to be supportive and the policy is good. We have to be the loyal opposition and raise the debating points and inform the public when we think he's headed down the wrong path. So I think we're ready to go.
What did you think of President Bush's farewell address last night? It was short and sweet.
Well, and I've been fortunate to be in close proximity to the president a couple times when he is sincere and he just puts it out clearly, succinctly, and you know that he is a man of faith and of strong conviction, and as all presidents have weathered 8 years of one of the most pressure-filled positions that God has created here on the earth for man, reflective, very similar. As a lot of people say, we wish the public could have seen more of him in that style than other styles when he's a little more formally packaged.
He made the point last night that we have now gone 7 years without a major terrorist attack within the borders of the United States, and he considers that perhaps one of the greatest successes of his two terms. What do you think?
Well, I do believe the flip side would have been true. Had we had another major event, he would have gotten criticized, as probably we should have. So, I think when history and files are opened about this time in history, I think people are going to understand that our country is a target, a major target for Islamic extremists, for the most part, who really want to destabilize our ability to promote democracy around the world, especially in areas where they don't want democracy. So he does have to get some of that credit. And I think I've always been on a position when you have bad guys, you need to go after them so that they're not going after you.
What do you think Bush's legacy will be in the end?
I think he has a couple. I think the recovery of after September 11th, the war on terror. We'll see how Iraq unfolds. If it continues to unfold in a democratic free state that has the rule of law and is an ally in a war on terror, that's going to be successful. Afghanistan is kind of in that position that Iraq was pre-surge. And so now we're going to, I think, address Afghanistan the way we addressed Iraq, although it's different people, different cultures, much more ethnicity issues there. Pushing for standards in education, No Child Left Behind, much maligned, but more money to education with standards. Mm-hmm. And you talk to people in public education, there's now more communication and great good has been done by that. Medicare prescription drug coverage never was provided to our seniors. Now it's a market-based solution that's still costs us a lot of money, but it costs us a lot less than if we would have done a one-payer government system.
I think the biggest thing that people are thinking about, obviously, right now, especially as every day the news gets worse or appears to get worse with regard to the economy, is the economy. Do you think that's fairly laid at President Bush's doorstep? And do you think that there's going to be anything approaching a quick solution with the exchange of power now?
I don't think it's fairly laid at the administration's feet. I think it's laid at the feet of those who coveted more than what they should have, and that's big money market managers, it's the mortgage, it's zero subprime folks, it's people buying homes that they couldn't afford using instruments that weren't economically really debatable. There's some government fault with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mm-hmm. and our ability to do that. It's interesting on the $350 billion additional bailout, how the president actually turned that over to the new administration and said, tell me you want me to ask for it, and then I'll ask for it, and gave ownership to that. I think the initial bailout, and I think the second release is also an error that we shouldn't do, but looks like we're going to head that way.
It's Friday afternoon, January the 16th. What kind of questions would you like to ask a U.S. congressman? John Shimkus is with us of the 19th District in Illinois. Our call-in number on this Friday afternoon, the 16th of January, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Well, you raised it there, and about a minute before we go to this break, why do you think that the bailout, as it's being pursued, is a problem?
You're rewarding the people who put us into this problem. You're giving taxpayers responsibility of assuming the risk of folks who should have assumed it on their own. What this is doing is also freezing up capital. You look at the smaller community banks that had offered lines of credit. Now the Office of Comptroller Currency is squeezing down, and it's doing just the opposite that we would hope it would do, which is free up currency and let people borrow again and spend.
When we come back from this break, your email and your phone calls for Congressman John Shimkus. A couple other things we need to talk about. Of course, the war is hardly over on both fronts. What does Congressman Shimkus think Obama will do? Some people are expecting an immediate pullout on both fronts. I don't think that's going to happen. We'll also talk about the Freedom of Choice Act. Stay tuned.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Depression, the Silent Epidemic, is the title of a seminar Tuesday evening, February the 10th, at the Wisconsin Room at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Beverly Yonke is the presenter. Learn how to spot signs of depression in yourself and how to help others who are suffering, deeply hurting, or depressed. Find out more about depression, the Silent Epidemic, at www.lmcusc.org or by calling 414-332-5732.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Will your church be one of the Issues Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues Etc. 300, click the sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues Etc. 300.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
All All right, folks, what's on your mind? We have Congressman John Shimkus in the studio with us for another 10 minutes. Then we'll talk with Wesley Smith about what he calls biological colonialism. It's a Washington update, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org. This email comes from Josh in St. Louis. He says, I've heard that Speaker Pelosi has recently changed some of the rules that were created after the Republican Revolution in 1994, such that conservatives will not be able to submit alternative bills, etc. Is it true that from a parliamentary standpoint, the minority will have less of a voice in the House of Representatives than when the GOP was in charge? If so, to what extent, and how do you fight for what's right other than voting against bad legislation?
The answer is she did. It's called a motion to recommit. I don't want to get into specifics. It just takes too long. But what it does give the opportunity of is makes it more difficult for us to hold their feet to the fire in raising taxes through this parliamentary procedure. Now, they may get more than they bargained for because by changing the rules, we just kind of find another way, you know, and hold their feet to the fire. She also eliminated the term limits for the chairman of committees and the like. But they're in the majority. They can do that. We have to educate the public. We vote no, and then we go say why. I mean, I had a global climate change hearing, and I was in rare form talking about jobs and the economy and this economy. Any climate change bill will raise the cost of energy. I mean, that's the premise of how they'll go about getting us off fossil fuels. And fossil fuels is a low-cost power. In this economy, if they want to do that, they're going to be held accountable, and that's what we do.
This email from Donnie says, we need to be on guard to protect our freedom. I fear the economic problems we now have will be an excuse to grab more power for President Obama. Many of the critics of George Bush have said he has expanded presidential power during his 7 years. The economy is another crisis wherein that could possibly happen as well. What are your thoughts, Congressman?
Rahm Emanuel is now the chief of staff for President Obama, says when you have crises, that's an opportunity. And for liberals to claim opportunities, what that means is bigger government, higher taxes, and the ability to micromanage our lives. I think it's a sincere fear. We as individual citizens have to stop asking for government for things and do things on our own. And ask for government for things that we collectively, individually can't do, like new road. We can't fund a road. But we've lost something, and that's that rugged individualism that really was a hallmark of our country.
Let's talk a little bit about the Freedom of Choice Act. It was about a year ago that then-Senator and candidate Barack Obama, speaking to a fundraiser for Planned Parenthood, promised that among the very first things he would do if he were elected would be to sign the Freedom of Choice Act into law. First of all, what is the Freedom of Choice Act in general, and how close is it to being sitting on President Obama's desk for his signature?
Well, basically, the Freedom of Choice Act says that a woman's right to choose abortion is preeminent. And so it would roll back all the victories and gains we've made as far as, I believe, partial birth abortion, parental notification, all the things that you've debated for so many years and talked about to your listeners. He would sign it. We haven't had a test vote yet on the floor to see what the ratio is. I have to believe we're still a pro-life majority bringing in. We got a lot of Democrats, but a lot of them are rural areas. I have to believe they're conservative ideologically and socially, and they would hopefully vote against that. And how a bill becomes a law, it has to pass both chambers. And then it has to be the exact same bill, and then it goes to the president. So we hope to stop it on the floor of the House.
Can you stay through the break
for some more
questions?
Sure,
so in other words, what's going to have to happen is, from the ground up, do you expect the Democratic majority in both houses of Congress to introduce Freedom of Choice Act in their own forms first thing after Obama is inaugurated?
I think it's already introduced.
Has it already been?
Diana DeGette from Colorado, I think it – the session's already started. So we've already had 2 weeks of legislative activity prior to the president, the new president being sworn in.
What's your sense? Will Speaker Pelosi fast track that piece of legislation?
I think she'll be careful. She's going to have to counter votes, and I'm not sure they're willing to put their conservative Democrats at risk. So I don't know the answer to that. I do know that it's in the major D.C. insider papers about this and how the pro-abortionists want to move it.
Let's talk a little bit about the war. You mentioned Afghanistan before. That's a deteriorating situation. Iraq seems to be kind of a stabilized situation. Barack Obama kind of went back and forth when he was running on what he would do with respect to the war. What do you expect will be done and needs to be done by this president as he enters office with regard to both fronts of the war?
Well, Iraq, easy. We need to follow the directions of the sovereign government of Iraq and leave when they tell us and want us to leave. And they're going to set a timeline, and hopefully that timeline will be based upon their security issues and their needs. I'll be the first one to help pack our guys' gear when Iraq says, we think we can handle it. And that'll be a victory. That's a huge victory versus leaving in shame and dishonor and failure. If we would not have done the surge, going back to the previous Bush, I mean, Bush stood alone, along with General Petraeus, for the surge. And now what we need to do is move the surge. What President-elect Obama needs to do in Afghanistan is use the goodwill and all the excitement from our European allies about his presidency and call him on the carpet and say, we're sending more troops to Afghanistan. This is an international effort. This is a NATO mission. Now pony up, and let's see what they do.
Do you think he can expect that from people like Sarkozy and Merkel and the big players in the European Union?
The French have already sent 700 more French soldiers. So we need the Germans to go into the fighting areas. We need to get the Canadians, who have done a great job, and the Dutch have done phenomenal jobs. We need to get them to stay. I mean, they're tired. They punch over their weight. But this, he needs to shame them.
Do you think he will do that? I mean, he has unprecedented political capital in Europe right now.
If I get a chance to talk to him on this issue, I will encourage him to do that, because he does have a huge amount of political capital that would help strengthen the NATO alliance and help us get control of this problem in Afghanistan.
What do you think about the cabinet as it has been constructed so far, or at least potentially constructed by President-elect Obama?
I think most people, even on our side, look, we want him to succeed. And I think for the most part, everybody's fairly pleased with his cabinet and nominees. I went over on the Senate side twice this week, and one was to watch the initial testimony and welcome Eric Shinseki, who is the Secretary of VA. Now, Rick Shinseki was my English professor at West Point. I know him well. He helped me graduate, and he is a phenomenal choice to be the Secretary of the VA, and I'm very proud of him, and I look forward to working with him.
Folks, I want to hear from you. We're open to any questions you might have about foreign policy, domestic issues. Congressman John Shimkus of the 19th Congressional District is here in studio with us on this Friday, January the 16th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Tom in Texas emails. He says, I believe that Representative Shimkus is the only Lutheran Church Missouri Synod member of Congress. I, as a fellow member of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, would like to see the true Lutheran relationship of two kingdom theology applied in our land. How can individual LCMS members on a local level as well as at the national level become involved in and be an influence in our government? What is Representative Shimkus's story of political involvement? Well, tell us your story a little bit, with about a minute and a half before we go to a break.
Yeah, I want to encourage him. He needs to find a home in a political party and be involved either as a helper, an activist, or as a candidate. We know that God wants good men of good character to serve in governing and helping in the government sector. Of course, Luther talked about that also quite a bit. The reality is, I came back out of the military to teach at the Lutheran High School in Edwardsville. I taught government history. I looked at the local government. I saw it was one-party rule, and I thought I could shake it up a little bit. So I ran locally for some nonpartisan seats and finally got elected countywide. In Madison County as county treasurer, did a good job. God opened doors. I stepped through by faith. And by golly, I couldn't get in this office without this is where God wants me to be.
You were part of the 94 Republican Revolution?
No, I was not. I was got elected in 96, so I came 2 years after that.
Interesting times. You saw a lot of. You've seen a lot of change in Washington D.C.
Back and forth, and the pendulum shifts, and now even more important as we're hopefully at the lowest ebb of conservative being assaulted. Now we have to grow again, and that's the time to encourage people to get engaged. And you know they can become Democrats too. There's a good need for conservatives in the Democratic Party to help change their ideology to one that supports life and lower taxes, and they can do that within the party atmosphere. But it's in our platform, the Republican platform. The pro-life plank is part of our platform, and that's why I decided to be a Republican.
Barack Obama has promised to bring kind of this unprecedented level of I'm going to be open, I'm going to listen to everybody kind of thing. Of course, every president promises that in some form or another, but people's hopes for him in this respect are higher. Do you expect him to really have an open ear to the other side of the aisle?
I expect him, yeah, to try. It's the second and third layers, and it's the Democrat leadership in Congress that has shown no willing to work with the Republican minority.
When we come back from this break, a few more minutes with Congressman John Shimkus, our Washington update this Friday, January the 16th. Then Wesley Smith will be our guest. We'll talk about biological colonialism, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE. Call during this break or email talkback at issuesztc.org, 1-877-623-6943.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Mammoths, are they really gone? Answers with Ken Ham, one of the authors of the popular The New Answers book.
Is it possible that mammoths might still be living today? In a remote area of Nepal, two large male elephants have been found, but they don't look like the typical Asian elephant. They resemble mammoths seen in cave paintings. One of the two elephants stands over 12 feet high. That's taller than the biggest Asian elephant on record. And both creatures have characteristics of mammoths, such as sloped back, a tail that's somewhat reptilian in appearance, and also it has a large dome-shaped hump on the top of their heads. Now, evolutionists have a major problem explaining how these unusual characteristics, which were supposed to have disappeared 10,000 years ago, could have evolved twice in the same elephant kind. But for the biblical creationists, well, it's not surprising at all. You see, Genesis tells us that all land animals are made on day 6 of creation about 6,000 years ago. We should always accept what the Bible teaches over the opinion of scientists. Huge creatures like the mammoth and even the dinosaur can best be explained by going to Genesis first.
Today's the last day we're offering our handbook on global warming. Can the book of Genesis even shed some light on this controversy? Well, for answers, request our booklet when you call us toll-free at 888-89-ANSWERS. Present our nonprofit ministry with a donation of any size, and we'll send it to you. That's toll-free, 888-89-ANSWERS.
Historic liturgy, cool. Liturgical dance, not cool. Kneeling for the Lord's body and blood on a Sunday morning, cool. Sitting in your theater-style seat with cup holder for your double mocha latte, not cool. We're the Brothers of John the Steadfast. If you're interested in traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice, check us out, www.steadfastlutherans.com. You are
my soul.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Another 25 minutes left in the program. We'll spend some of that wrapping up our Washington update with Congressman John Shimkus of the 19th District of Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Here's Jim calling from his car. Hi, Jim.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Two comments. One, I really have a hard time with Republicans who are speaking nicely about the cabinet choices. Some of them are okay, as they said, Secretary of Defense, et cetera. But, for example, with Hillary Clinton as state, with all the litany of Gates, Foulgate, Travelgate, et cetera, that she was involved in, her character is big time at issue. Even candidate Obama seriously questioned her foreign policy capabilities, and, of course, later he dismissed that comment, which serves as his hypocrisy. But she has no legitimate foreign policy experience, and to be Secretary of State, I believe, is some sort of payoff to her. Secondly, my other comment is, notwithstanding President Bush's nominations to the Supreme Court, Roberts, Alito, et cetera, in regards to the pro-life issue, he has really, I think, failed to use the 8 years in office as a way to persuade the American public of the simple fact that the unborn, in spite of all the other attempts to declare it otherwise, is a human being. And as a result, we've had the continuation of unabated abortion for 8 years under his watch, and 6 years, I might add, to Representative Shimkus under the Republican leadership of the Congress.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. He's got a couple points there. Your thoughts on the appointment of Senator Clinton to state?
I do believe it was a payoff. I think it gets her out of the Senate. It gets her away from being an opponent, and the U.S. senators are going to confirm her. I will also highlight the fact, and again, Rick Shinseki, who's a good friend of mine, who was the chief of staff of the Army, is undeniably qualified to head the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. So I think you have to go through the whole list, and I do think the vast majority of them are of higher quality and aren't partisan in nature than you many of it would expect. You cannot underestimate the impact of Roberts and Alito. Major victories, and that they're young and they're going to be there for a long time.
Jim says he thinks that President Bush failed to use the bully pulpit to kind of use the power of persuasion on the life issue. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm not going to debate that. I know the president's pro-life and I'm pro-life, and I do know that even when we were in the majority, we have a sector of the Republican Party that's not. And when we had small majorities, all it took was a couple of the vast majority. Again, the pro-life position is a part of the Republican Party plank. And that's important. That's why I am a Republican, but it's not what everyone holds to.
He mentions, again, the cabinet. I'm wondering, it's not a cabinet position, but it's certainly a presidential pick, and that's Fed chair. And some people, I know you're probably not too happy with Ben Bernanke, given the fact that he's come back several times asking for a lot of money and kind of the blank check. But will Obama have to replace Bernanke as federal chair?
I think that's going to be a long time in coming. I don't even think that's in the near term a debate right now.
Okay. Let's see. Carrie in Minnesota says, if the Freedom of Choice Act got signed into law, what would we then need to do to fight abortion? How could it be reversed if it could be reversed?
Well, and you've used your ability through the airwaves. People have to – I was traveling my district. I have parts of 30 counties in southern Illinois, and I was speaking to a lady who was who's strongly pro-life. And she's got families going to the inauguration. They're strongly pro-life. They still voted for Barack Obama. And she's just scratching her head. And I tell you, victories are won politically, well, through God's will, through prayer, and through political involvement. And you have to elect pro-life legislators if you ever want to really turn this thing around.
It's a simple numbers and who has the majority.
If we want to stop the Freedom of Choice Act, we have to have more votes against it on the floor of the House than they have. And everyone who's in your listening audience has a member of Congress who has a record on this issue. And if your folks in your listening audience do not know what their member of Congress voting record is on this issue, shame on them. And they ought to find out right now. They ought to, once you're done, after your hours are over, they ought to call the office and ask.
What's the record?
Yeah, what's your record? Or check the National Right to Life website. The information is so easy to obtain these days.
What's going on in Illinois politics? I mean, this is...
I'll tell you what. Chicago politics has flown to state government. This is ward politics that's been transformed to state politics. I don't want to get partisan. The reality is the Democrats were out of the governor's mansion for so long that they accepted a guy with a flawed character to be governor. And not only accepted him, they reelected him. And now they can't control him. And hence, this is what we got.
Do you think that his appointment, shrouded in controversy, not the man himself, but the appointment, do you think that it's going to be, if confirmed, a permanent black mark on that Illinois seat as long as he sits there?
Well, I was at the swearing-in of Roland Burris yesterday. Yeah. So,
does he have a cloud over his head because he was appointed?
All you got to do is read the major papers of the state of Illinois and their editorials, and some have said, as every time we look at Roland Burris, we're going to see Rod Blagojevich. So, yeah, but he still has a vote, and he's a U.S. senator, and he's one of, right now, 99, because we still have an open seat, and that's the Minnesota seat. So he is one of 99, so he's very powerful.
Is there a possibility of a return of a pro-life Democratic voice in the state of Illinois? I mean, I've lived in the state for a long time. It's a very Democratic state, depending on where you are in terms of the party. But is there a possibility of that emerging in Illinois?
Well, remember that politics in Illinois is governed, unfortunately, by Chicago and the suburbs, more liberal. Of course, that's even more so for the Democratic Party. It takes strong people who are strong Democrats and pro-life to do the grassroots work and change the Democratic Party from inside.
So what's on the agenda now in Washington? I imagine the economy's kind of pushing everything off to the side, but what's on the agenda now next when you guys are
just going? 2 days ago, I sat in the first global climate change hearing in which we had the group called USCAP, who was with the environmental community and some business community, says, "Hey, we've got to compromise on how we're going to do this." And my point was to address global climate change through their position means to monetize carbon, which means put a value to carbon that's going to cost the individual consumer. Don't hide that cost by a tricky cap and trade program. If you're going to do anything, and I wouldn't support it, but do a carbon tax so that the public understands. When we're in a slow economy, how dare them try to bring a piece of legislation that's going to raise the cost to the average consumer and the individual and hurt rural Americans, small town, and the poor?
Are you saying it's not the right time for it? Are you saying it's a bad idea whenever
I'm not a climate change believer. I don't worship at that altar, and some of the environmental left do. I believe, you know, God's in control and that we live through seasons. Carbon dioxide is not a poisonous emittent. We do it. Mm-hmm. If there is cost incurred by climate change, we ought to work at addressing the effects, not try to stop something that we cannot stop. I mean, the audacity of us saying that we're going to control the Earth's climate, it's just beyond the pale that we, man, are going to control the world's climate.
What are you hoping Barack Obama will say to the nation Tuesday when he has the eyes of the whole world looking at him?
Well, I think he has a great opportunity to bring some optimism back into the country. That's, again, we've taken a few blows. I would predict that it'll be a kind of like a mixing between Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech and John F. Kennedy's speech about what we can achieve, you know, and calling the country to service. If we feel good about ourselves and we can use that to build and turn our malaise around, then he would have been successful.
I've been impressed with only about 30 seconds. I've been impressed with President Bush, what it appears to be, at least outside looking in, a willingness on his part to be very cooperative in the transition and afford President-elect Obama an awful lot of access and kind of early access to the decisions. It seems like he's leaving office with a great deal of dignity in that respect. Your thoughts?
Our republic, the founding fathers, and how it's evolved is really, truly amazing. I do believe by divine providence that we have a system that is a peaceful transition of power. A peaceful transition of power. and that President Bush is showing that and magnanimously in helping in this transition. The other thing, the picture for the outside world, who attack us numerous times, that we in this great nation can elect an African American to the highest office of the land when we're the ones who are attacked, and some of the great European friend nations of the world, like the French or the Germans, could never do that. Well, maybe not never, but I bet you it's 50 years away before the French elect a minority as prime minister.
Well, have a safe trip back to D.C. and a good seat, I hope, at the inauguration.
Thank you
for being our guest. Congressman John Chimkus of the 19th District in Illinois. When we come back, Wesley Smith will talk a little bit about biological colonialism to wrap up this Friday's Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely upon you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support of Issues, Etc.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois, is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues, Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to eighth grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
A major threat in Europe.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The Center for Reproductive Rights, a New York-based organization of pro-abortion lawyers, is seeking to bring a case before the European Court of Human Rights that challenges Ireland's constitutional ban on abortion. The group, using the case of three Irish women who were denied abortions, asserts the ban violates the European Convention on Human Rights by discriminating against women and violating the women's right to privacy. Although pro-life legal analysts doubt the court has legal grounds to overturn a constitutional ban, they point out that the court overturned a Polish law in 2007 that restricted abortions.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.